Dr. Clendenning, we're back at it again with Total Disruption. How are you today?
I'm awesome. How is the Michael Laversi today?
I'm awesome. Welcome to the show, everybody. Today we're going to really get deep down into the element of man-made versus handmade, because you brought that up, and I don't know what the hell you're talking about. And then I want to talk about a few other things about managing emotions and a little bit of the, you know, fatigue, and we hit on this probably about 4 or 5 episodes ago with the stress and all that shit. But there's a lot of people out there that I've been getting DMs and conversations from that want to talk about this. So what the hell are you talking about with man-made versus handmade? What does that even mean?
I got asked this the other day. I was posting some pictures on...
By who? A lumberjack?
I have to look back, actually. I don't think it was a lumberjack. They would know probably the difference. Trying to think of who asked me that. It was on social media. I was just responding to somebody on some pictures that I had posted. And I think you saw them of the kitchen cabinets that I built. It was just something that came up kind of different because they were asking, right? What's the difference between handmade and man-made? Because yes, I'm a man and I made the thing, therefore it should be man-made, right? And that's not necessarily true. Like historical definition wise, man-made refers to materials, right? Man-made refers to a material. So like I use for the cabinet boxes, I used melamine, which is a man-made material, right? It comes out of a factory as a 4-foot by 8-foot sheet, whatever thickness that you're playing with. And it's got 2 slick white sides on either side. Guaranteed, if you live in a house anywhere, you have some form of melamine in it somewhere. Drywall is another form of man-made, right? It's a product more than it's a creation. So handmade means if you went out in your shop and you took a material, wood, drywall, concrete, take whatever the thing is, and you build something out of it and you use your hands to make it, that becomes a handmade product. Now you can also look at products that are man-made. They're built in factories. Toys are a great example, right? They're going to be plastic injection molding, and those are going to be man-made because they come out of a factory. Okay. So it didn't have a physical person touching it kind of component of a craftsmanship side of it. It was an interesting comment that I saw on social media a couple days ago. And I was just, I wanted to throw that out on the show because I know we have a much broader reach in the event that it'll help somebody else with a little bit of understanding.
So can I hand make melamine?
You cannot. It basically has to come out of some sort of factory, out of a press.
Don't tell me what I can and can't do. I can do everything.
You can do everything. You can go in the basement and you can create a vacuum machine and you can build some cool stuff. And you probably could. But the other way to make a 4x8 sheet of something is to glue a bunch of smaller wood together in big flats and mill it down. And that would be a handmade sheet of wood. Totally true. I mean, that's a way to do it.
All right. Well,
man-made versus handmade. I got asked that question and it seemed like such an obvious to me. But apparently it's not. Evidently there are people that are looking at that and they're like, I don't know what that means.
I guess what you can do though is you can use a bunch of man-made materials to make something into handmade product.
Correct.
Like custom sculpting. You can take a bunch of melamine, cut it, shape it. So, you know, the materials are, you know, the sum of its parts. This kind of has a business play. Leveraging AI, leveraging associates, leveraging administrative assistant, leveraging people, you know, handmade, you know, versus man-made. And you know, while a lot of people like, for a great example, if you never watched this dude, Trax NYC, the guy's one of the top YouTube marketers of the day. Trax NYC. The guy probably has great jewelry. He's a jeweler, controversial guy. His name's Max. He's all over the internet doing the craziest, coolest marketing showman style stuff. Does he sit there and hand turn, you know, necklaces and chains? No. Does he man make any of that stuff? No. People do. He has lab diamonds. he has people that do things, but what he does is he creates the end product with all these different products. He creates the marketing. He creates the audience. He creates the things. There, those of you that are stuck in that tip-to-tail mentality, you got to do everything, that's bullshit. You can shine, you can have a highlight off of other people's cumulative work. Again, we're using the melamine here thing, for example, but you could turn melamine into beautiful custom cabinetry. You don't have to plane the wood yourself. You don't have to stain the thing yourself. You can create different shapes and holes and things and utilize materials for another end result. So that's our handmade versus man-made correlation. Now let's move into something that's a little bit closer to home. And a lot of people are kind of suffering from this. And it's sort of when you're under stress and when you're in duress making decisions and having the emotional consistency to maintain good decisions. Because in the world of life, which is the whole world, which is everything, you can't always hit the timeout button. Or you can, but like for 5 minutes at a time. There are certain times you cannot put your head in the sand. It's just not going to work. It's going to be catastrophic. It's going to go from saying, I need a healthy break, or I'm self-sabotaging. And I don't care who you are. That's just the way it is. There is no exception. Absolutely no exceptions to this. At some point in your life, you cannot just stick your head in the sand and say, all right, I'm not going to make decisions today. It will cost you tremendously. I've done it and I've regretted it and I'll never do it again. We're going to go to you here in a minute, but I've learned my lesson. I've done that several times, especially in my 20s and sometimes in my 30s, where I'll be in a state of mind where I just don't feel like, man, I'm in a funk. I know better than to make big critical decisions. Sometimes that funk lasts for 2, 3, 4 days. Then it builds into the resisting. Then it builds into not getting back to people, sloppiness. It leads to tricky habits if you're not careful. I've seen it. I've coached it. I've done it. Now, you're in a state of physical decline because you're sitting there laboring every single day. You're in a state of emotional exhaustion because you're pushing a project that you're currently in charge of, that you're currently literally doing, not outsourcing, or at least not outsourcing everything. How are you handling all this?
I have to implement a system in this spot, right? I've got to have some sort of tactical device to fall back on. That I've got to be able to implement. Now, if I'm just randomly saying, well, I won't make a decision about that today, basically then I'm shifting into procrastination mode, right? If I just simply say that without some sort of system in front of it, right? There's a decision that has to be made. You know, as we looked at this, you know, this, all right, let's go back to marathons, right? I use marathons as the example all the time because I think, generally, everybody understands what a marathon is. And that's business. Business is a marathon, plain and simple. Life is a marathon. How you run it, how you play it is exactly how you do it. There's a strategy going into it. What's the end result going to be? And I've got to know myself. I've got to know my body. I got to know my brain. I got to know all the things. And I've got to have some trapdoors in there too, knowing, hey, you know, what if I get sick? What if there's one added thing in there? What if a rig breaks down? What if the what ifs, right? Those things have to come up. That you've got to have those built into your system. You got to know that it's not going to run that great, right? It's not going to be, well, here's how it's going to be. Week one, I'm going to be this, you know, mile one, I'll be this tired. Mile two, I'll be this tired. Mile three, mile four. You don't know. You could step funny on a, you know, a blade of grass and kind of, you know, shuffle your hip out and you could be running kind of funny for 3 or 4 miles. You've got to plan some contingencies in there to be able to make and get to your end goal of what you're trying to do in the marathon. So you've got to have the system up front. You've got to decide what it is. So I made the choice and I took some pages out of Mike's book of what my decision-making process was going to be during this particular project, how I was going to do it. Big decisions, I sleep on them, right? But it's not I sleep on them, then I get to them when I get to them, right? I'm going to sleep on them. They're going to be the first thing that I deal with, first thing in the morning the next day. I'm going to make the decision one way or the other. And it's not going to be the military version of I'm going to choose not to make a decision, and that's a decision too. That's not what I'm doing. Like, that's not what this one is about. That's not part of my system. So my system is literally, you know, depending on the severity of the decision, right? And I grade everything on a scale of 1 to 10. All my clients know that, you know, relative to severity or how I feel or anything. If it's going to be a severity of 6 to 10, above 6 or above, I'm going to sleep on it till the next day. I'm not going to make that decision right now. If it's below it, I'm going to make that decision in the same business day. If it is below a 4, I'm going to make it within 2 hours. If it's below a 2, I'm just going to make it right now and get it off my plate. Like, what do I want for lunch? That's a 2. That's a 1 most of the time when it comes to decision making. But it's a, you know, at mile 17, am I going to, you know, right now we're like mile 22. But, you know, am I going to sprint the next 200 yards to pick up a couple minutes? You know, that's the decision. That what's the severity of that decision? That has consequences. I've got to weigh that one out in the big marathon piece, which means I've got to wait to make that decision. I can't just, and I will give you the live example of this. I ran an actual marathon. It was a relay marathon that we did that's called Ass Over the Pass. And we ran from Budweiser in Fort Collins to Steamroad. It was a cool race. But you run over 7 different mountain passes. The elevation gain, like I could tell you all the numbers, it's huge. But there's a cost to the decision. So in my first leg, relatively flat, cruising around, doing the stuff, I was gaining on this younger guy on the Veritas team. And he had his Veritas shirt on. And I'm gaining on him. And I could see about a mile and a half out, I could see the finish line of this particular leg. I decided to be a showboater, and I decided to run this guy down to try to get a roadkill before the end of this. And I took about a mile at a pace I shouldn't have taken, and it cost me. By the time I got to the last leg, the results were just about catastrophic. I was at barely a ruffle running down the road, and it was because of that rash decision-making process during times of stress. So you've got to, for me, I've got to scale it. That's my main process, is I've got to say, where does it land in my scale of 1 to 10 and relative to importance? Am I going to die from it? Or is this just something, you know, if I got to choose a pink color, right? You got to think about, that's how I set up the system in that.
That choosing, you know, not to choose is annoying. That's so annoying. That's just so, like,
it came out of the military, and I can't believe of course they're going to defend it, but I agree, man. I totally agree with that. I think that's lazy. I think that's planned procrastination.
It's almost a no.
Yeah. I think it's planned procrastination. I just don't feel like it right now. So I'm going to say I'm choosing not to make the decision right now. No, you're procrastinating. Let's get really honest about that. We've got a friend of ours that I know that I'm hoping he's listening to this one, because I actually want him to come and argue with us about it. And he's an ex-military guy. He talks about this specifically in one of his keynote speeches. But for me, it annoys me. Like, I can't stand it. I'm not choosing not to choose. I have to still set a deadline when I'm making a choice, yes or no, left or right, up or down. You know, this is the direction that has to be done by this time.
Well, I don't know, man. There's just a lot of people out there with all this word speak and just spin you around, and it's a matter of convenience, you know. In my opinion, some of the hardness of decision making is getting lost in the vogue everything's going to be okay world, and everything is always going to be okay. It might not be okay for a very long time because of a choice you made. But either you're going to get used to it, you're going to push through whatever it is you push through, but everything eventually will be okay, one way or the other. But yeah, it's not going to be okay if you don't make some really hard decisions. And
you're going to have, and here, and I, Real quick, I'm going to talk about, not real quick, you know, but we all know better than that, but like from a controversial standpoint in AI, this is where I think some of the art of decision-making is being lost. And this is where, like, man, this is almost feels like gambling. Is I'm seeing people asking, pick your AI, don't care, not going to call one out, asking them the things, you know, hey, I got this hard decision, which way should I go? And versus reading the entire thing of AI where it's giving you all the options and going through that, it'll say, well, here's what doing this decision on this side looks like. And they'll just pick the first thing AI says and they'll run with it that way. Man, that is gambling at its finest. Yeah. I mean, you're asking a computer model to look at your existence, your life that is taking you however many years to build to this point, and give a rash decision-making process on what you should do. It's, you know, it's one thing if you're going to go, hey, I got these two places to go for dinner. Which one do you recommend? All right, well, that's different. But big life decisions, should I buy a house or should I not buy a house? That's not one you give AI and then let it say yes or no. Like, that's cheating, man. You're taking your fate out of your hands. You're choosing not to decide. You're giving that decision to something or someone else to do. I think that's a horrible business plan.
Yeah, that's terrible, man. And I sometimes struggle with making choices. You know, like we've got a couple of big ones coming up. We've got some travel coming up. One of my kids has games. And it's, do I jump through 21 and a half hoops so that he can get to a particular set of games and then jump on a plane and then get somebody to take him there, buy a ticket, do the this, do the that, make sure it all smoothly works out, fly to meet, do all that crap? Or does he miss? These are big decisions because these games were added last minute. There were other arrangements already made based on availability of the time. And some of these things are important because it's in the meat of the season and there's development going on and there's games. And I don't want him to miss a lot. Paid a lot of money for him to play. He wants to play. You know, it's one of those things, right? But it's taken me a couple days to work my way through what I'm going to say to coaches, what I'm going to say to people. Do I need their help? I'm already looking at certain options. You know, it's not everything can happen, but again, it's, I'm giving myself a few day deadline to like make choices because they're coming up. It's coming up. It's going to happen. It's crazy, but it's got to happen. So there's that piece, as you would say, making decisions. Here's the other thing I wanted to bring up. When I'm in a kind of a weird space and I'm making decisions, I like to kind of work on some details. And if I'm ever really cloudy about something, this is kind of not in your world right now. It's not that you're cloudy and working on things, but like to switch gears, I'll get real tactical. I'll go to my P&L statement. I will go to bank accounts. I will look at finances. When I start getting, here's a hack for everybody. If you're a little unclear about making decisions, start reviewing your financial expenditures, and all of a sudden, shit gets real, real quick. And it doesn't influence everything, but it influences a lot of things. I'll give an example. Let's say somebody wants to lose some weight. You're an entrepreneur, or you're a parent, or you're a busy person that wants to lose weight. Well, when you actually like go back and look at your financials, and you look at how much money you're either spending on alcohol, entertainment, food, where you're placing your money, you start to look at your patterns and you start to look at how much money you've actually allocated to your fatness. And you go back and you say, well, wait a minute, if I just put the same amount of money into the grocery store and prep time, the time it takes me to get to these restaurants, the time it takes me to order, the time it takes me to list, it's net push. I can probably lose weight without actually even trying. It's a revolutionary idea. It really does work. Same amount of money, same amount of time. I just take that same money and same time, and now I'm losing weight. Holy shit. you know.
And it, Mike brings up a great point, right? Go back and look at your financial history, because that will tell you the story of your decision-making process. It'll totally tell you the story. You know, how many times did you stop at the coffee shop to get coffee on the deal on your week? Yeah. How many times did you stop and get, you know, McDonald's or Burger King or Wendy's? I'm naming them all because I don't want to get in trouble from one of them, right? How many times, like, look at your decision-making process. And, like, food is a massive trigger for me. Oh, yeah. Always has been a massive trigger for me.
In what way?
Well, it is a – I like food. I like food a lot. Like, I like to eat. I love food. I love barbecue. I like cheeseburgers. I like pizza. I like all the crap I shouldn't be eating. Like, plain and simple. I like steak, though. I like elk steak, which is good for me. And when I get tired, I don't want to cook. I don't want to put forth the effort to do so. So that this is a great indicator of where my decision-making process goes. Because if I'm tired, like if I got up and I didn't remember to take meat out of the freezer, right? This is a really, really simple one. If I didn't take meat out to be able to eat in the afternoon, I am not going to spend a half an hour building a great salad. Not my thing, man. I'm not going to do it. Unless if a salad takes me 30 seconds, I'll eat salad all day. If it takes me 30 minutes, I will never touch it. That is just, I know my decision-making process. But if I don't have meat out and there's nothing but salad to eat, guess what I'm doing? I'm going out to eat. I'm going to drive. Right now, I got to drive 45 minutes to find food. That's where I'm at. I'm a long ways from food, but I will do it. I will drive 45 minutes one way to go find food. I will order something that is not awesome for me, and then I will drive 45 minutes back. That's what happens, and I have to be aware of it. So think about that when you're tired. You know, Mike's shaking his head like, what a stupid decision. He's right. It's a stupid decision. And what governed it? Being tired. Being wiped out. Like, I've got to have a – and the same is true. And like, Stacey and I go through this all the time. Yes, that's my wife's name. We talk about it all the time. Like, when I hit a level of exhaustion, meal prep has got to be done. Plain and simple. We've got to do it on Sunday. There's got to be grab and go, super simple, but good for me stuff to be able to grab so that I will eat here. And I won't make a stupid rash decision and drive an hour and a half because my time's expensive. I don't know if anybody's put gas in a car lately. Fuel right now is obscenely expensive. Yeah. Driving 45 minutes, dinner, a $15 cheeseburger just cost me like $250 by the time I value my time and I value the fuel of what it was going to take. Go back and review your financials and see what your decision-making process leads to. It's a great, like, I know people that are Amazon shoppers when they're tired. When they get wore out, their favorite thing to do is go on Amazon or Walmart and just start dumping stuff in their cart. Makes them feel good about what they're doing, but they're spending money on stuff they don't need.
Well, I will say on the flip side, every once in a while, it's probably a good idea to get the hell out of Dodge and go drive 45 minutes, eat a cheeseburger, eat whatever, come back, collect yourself. But that's every blue moon, right? Like, I love coffee. But if I ran down the street at $2 a shot every time, I don't give a shit how much money I'm making, dude. You know, it's a pain in the ass. I'm going to get, you know, somebody else made. I didn't make it. It's just, it really is. It's inconsistent at best. And it is a break. But do I always need it? I don't know. Probably not. So that's why I don't do it anymore. You know, when I'm on the road sometimes, and I'm an expert at living on the road, man. I'm so good that I calculate my food to money ratios, like no fridge or very minimal cool storage, very minimal expenditure. How and where can I strategically go to source food if I don't pre-plan or pre-pack on the cheap and still get my minimum daily requirements and not break the bank? I'm telling you, man, I'm an expert. I should probably put a book out on that.
You probably ought. And I will give Mike props on that one. We talk a lot, right? We get on the phone all the time. Mike doesn't stop at fast food places. Mike goes into these little bodega places and he orders salad. I've been on the phone when he's ordering stuff. He will order these, you know, very complex salad arrangements that come out like food that he needs for fuel that his body needs. That's called pre-planning. That's a system of, okay, I know if I don't have this system in place, my decision-making process is going to lead me to hitting the quickest fast food greasy thing I can grab. I've got to have a system in place. So right, that's what I would tell you from the exhaustion. Cases,
like, you'll attest to this. In some cases, it needs to be, it could be six meals that you're pre-planning. Six.
Yeah.
Six. Yep. Try taking cold storage with six meals. Oh, shit, we're out of time, dude.
We're there.
Finish up with something here. Are you good?
Nah, man. I would just tell you, have a system for when you're exhausted so that your system takes over in your decision-making process and not your bad habits.
Amen to that, brother. All right. Well, again, you guys have tuned in to another episode of Total Disruption. Thank you. We'll see you next time. My name is Mike Laversa for Dr. Jake Clendenning. Now it's your turn to disrupt.